Get it for me, Mrs. Greer, Reacher said. Rusty turned in her chair and went for Walker's pocket. He offered no resistance, even leaned sideways to make it easier for her. She came out with a small blued steel revolver, a Colt Detective Special, .38 caliber, 6 shots, 2-inch barrel. A small weapon. Rusty cradled it in her palm, and it looked right at home in a woman's hand. "Where's Ellie, Hack?" Reacher asked again.
"I don't know. I really don't. They use motels. I don't know which one. They wouldn't tell me. They said it's safer that way."
"How do you contact them?"
"A Dallas number. It must be rerouted."
"Phones are out,"
Bobby said.
"Where is she, Hack?" Reacher asked again. "I don't know. I'd tell you if I did."
Reacher raised Alice's gun, held it straight out across the table. His arms were long, and the muzzle came to rest 2 feet from Walker's face.
"Watch the trigger finger, Hack," he said.
He tightened his finger until the skin shone white in the candlelight. The trigger moved backward, a 1/16 of an inch, then an 1/8. "You want to die, Hack?" Walker nodded.
"Yes. Please."
"Tell me first," Reacher said. "Make it right. Where is she?"
"I don't know," Walker said.
He stared at the muzzle. It was so close his eyes were crossing. The candle flames were reflected in the polished nickel. Reacher sighed and slackened his finger and lowered the gun all the way back to the tabletop. It hit the wood with a quiet sound. Nobody spoke, and nobody moved, until Rusty's hand came up with the tiny revolver in it. She raised it in a wavering circle, and it finished up pointing at nobody in particular.
"Snoop wouldn't hit a woman," she whispered. "Those were all riding accidents."
Reacher shook his head.
"He beat Carmen for 5 years, Rusty. Almost every day they were married, until he went to jail. Broke her bones and split her lips and bruised her flesh. And that was after raping and torturing and murdering 25 human beings at night in the desert 12 years ago. She trembled wildly.
"No," she said. "That isn't true."
The gun wavered unsteadily. "Point that thing at me and I'll shoot you," Reacher said. "Believe me, it would be an absolute pleasure." She stared at him for a second, and then crooked her arm and touched the gun to the side of her own head, just above her ear. The metal penetrated her lacquered hair like a stick thrust through a bird's nest. She kept it there for a long moment, and then pulled it away and turned and twisted in her chair and moved it again and brought it level with Hack Walker's forehead, with the muzzle no more than 2 inches from his skin.
"You killed my boy,"
she whispered. Walker made no attempt to move. He just nodded, very slightly.
"I'm sorry," he whispered back.
No revolver has a safety mechanism, and a Colt Detective Special is a double-action pistol, which means the first half of the trigger's travel clicks the hammer back and revolves the cylinder under it, and then, if you keep on pulling, the hammer drops and the gun fires.
"No, Rusty," Reacher said.
"Mom?"
Bobby called. The hammer clicked back.
"No!"
Alice shouted. The hammer tripped. The gun fired. There was colossal noise and flame, and the crown of Walker's head blasted backward into the candle-lit gloom. It just came off like a lid and splintered into mist. Colt super autos with hollow points, Reacher's subconscious mind told him. The flame died abruptly, and he saw a blackened hole between Walker's eyes and his hair on fire from the muzzle flash. Then Rusty fired again. The second bullet followed the first straight through Walker's head, and he went down, and Rusty kept the gun rock steady in the air above him and fired into space. 3, 4, 5, 6. The third shot splintered the wall, and the fourth hit the Coleman lantern and shattered its glass, and the fifth hit its kerosene reservoir and exploded it over a 10-foot square of wall. It blew sideways and ignited with a bright flash, and the sixth shot hit the exact center of the flames. She kept on pumping the trigger even after the gun was empty. Reacher watched her finger flexing and the hammer clicking and the cylinder stepping around obediently. Then he turned and watched the wall. The kerosene was thicker than water and had more surface tension. It flung outward and dripped and ran and burned fiercely. It set the wall on fire immediately. The dry old wood burned with no hesitation at all. Blue flames crept upward and sideways, and the faded red paint bubbled and peeled ahead of them. Tongues of flame found the vertical seams between the boards and raced up them like they were hungry. They reached the ceiling and paused momentarily, and then curved horizontally and spread outward. The air in the room stirred to feed them. The candles guttered in the sudden draft. Within 5 seconds, the wall was burning along its full height. Then the fire started creeping sideways. The flames were blue and smooth and curled and liquid like they were sculpted out of something wet and soft. They glowed with mysterious inner light. Flakes of burning paint were drifting on hot currents and landing randomly. The fire was creeping clockwise very fast, coming around behind everybody in the room. "Out!" Reacher shouted. Alice was already on her feet, and Bobby was staring at the fire. Rusty was sitting absolutely motionless, still patiently working the trigger. The clicking of the firing mechanism was lost behind the crackle of the flames.
"Get her out!"
Reacher shouted.
"We got no water!" Bobby shouted back. "The well pump won't work without electricity! Just get your mother out!"
Reacher shouted. Bobby stood completely still. The flames had found the floorboards. The paint bubbled and peeled outward in a wide arc, and the fire started a patient journey in pursuit. Reacher kicked chairs out of the way and lifted the table and overturned it on top of the flames. They died under it and then detoured neatly around it. The ceiling was well alight. Walker's body was sprawled on the floor near the window. His hair was still on fire from the muzzle flash. It smoked and smoldered with flames of a different color. The fire had found the door frame. Reacher stepped across and pulled Rusty out of her chair, spun her around and straight-armed her through the smoke and out of the room ahead of him. Alice was already in the foyer. She had the front door open. Reacher could feel damp air sucking in to feed the fire. It was keeping low, down by his feet. It was already a strong breeze. Alice ran down the steps to the yard, and Reacher pushed Rusty after her. She clattered down and staggered out onto the wet dirt and got steady on her feet and just stood there, still holding the empty gun straight out from her shoulder, still clicking the useless trigger. Walker's Lincoln was parked next to the Jeep, wet and dirty and travel-stained. Reacher ducked back inside the foyer. It was filling with smoke. It was pooling near the ceiling and crowding downward in layers. The air was hot, and paint was scorching everywhere. Bobby was coughing hard near the parlor door. The parlor was already a mass of flame, an inferno. The fire was curling out of the door. The door itself was on fire. The red-framed mirror cracked in the heat, and Reacher turned and saw two of himself staring back. He took a deep, spluttering breath and ran toward the flames and grabbed Bobby by the wrist, twisted his arm and grabbed the back of his belt like he was arresting him and ran him out into the darkness, hustled him down the steps, and shoved him toward the center of the yard.
"It's burning down!"
Bobby screamed.
"All of it!"
The windows were alive with yellow light. Flames were dancing behind them. Smoke was drifting through the screens, and there were loud, random cracking sounds from inside as timbers yielded and moved. The soaked roof was already steaming gently.
"It's burning down!"
Bobby screamed again.
"What are we going to do?"
"Go live in the barn," Reacher said. "That's where people like you belong."
Then he grabbed Alice's hand and ran straight for the Jeep. 17. When the storm moved north, the driver knew his partners weren't coming back. It was a sensation so strong it took on the weight of absolute fact. It was like the rain had left a void behind that would never be filled. He turned in his chair and stared at the motel room door, sat like that for minutes. Then he stood up and walked over and opened it. Looked out into the parking lot, focusing left, focusing right. The black top was streaming with water. The air smelled sharp and clean. He stepped outside and walked 10 paces in the dark. There was a running gutter somewhere, and the gurgle of street drains and loud dripping from the trees, but nothing else. Nothing else at all. Nobody was coming. Nobody was ever going to come again. He knew it. He turned around. Wet grit slid under his shoes. He walked back, stepped inside the room and closed the door gently behind him, looked over at the bed. looked at the sleeping child in it.
You drive, Reacher called. North, okay?
He pushed her toward the driver's door and ran around the hood. She pulled her seat forward and he racked his backward, unfolded the maps on his knees. To his left, the red house was burning fiercely. All the windows were bright with flame, both floors now. The maid ran out of the kitchen door, wrapped in a bathrobe. The light of the fire caught her face. There was no expression on it.
Okay, let's go, he said.
She slammed the transmission into drive and gunned the motor. The transfer case was still locked in four-wheel drive, and all four tires spun and scattered wet stones, and the car took off. She slewed past Walker's Lincoln, made the right under the gate without pausing, accelerated hard. He turned his head and saw the first flames appear at the eaves of the roof. They licked outward and paused and ran horizontally, searching for sustenance. Steam was pouring off the soaked shingles and mixing with smoke. Rusty and Bobby and the maid were watching it drift, hypnotized. He glanced away and didn't look back again, just stared ahead, and then riffled through the maps on his knees and found a large-scale sheet showing Pecos County in its entirety. Then he reached up and clicked the dome light on.
Faster, he said. I got a real bad feeling about this.
The 4 hours were long gone, but he waited anyway. He felt a certain reluctance. How could he not? He wasn't a monster. He would do what he had to do, for sure, but he wasn't going to enjoy it, exactly. He walked over and opened the door again and hung the Do Not Disturb tag on the outside handle, closed the door, and locked it from the inside. He appreciated the locks motels put on their doors. A big lever to turn on the inside, a satisfying, heavy click, smooth and oily, no corresponding catch on the outside. It helped. Absolute, undisturbed security was a useful thing. He slipped the chain on and started into the room. Alice drove as fast as she dared. The Jeep wasn't a great road vehicle. It rolled too much and rocked violently from side to side. The steering was vague. It required constant correction. It was a problem. But Reacher ignored it and just held the map high where it caught the light from the roof console. He stared hard at it and checked the scale and held his finger and thumb apart like a little compass and traced a circle. You done any tourist stuff around here? He asked. She nodded at the wheel.
Some, I guess. I went to the McDonald Observatory. It was great.
He checked the map. The McDonald Observatory was southwest of Pecos, high up in the Davis Mountains. That's 80 miles, he said. Too far.
For what?
For them to have been today. I think they'll have been a half hour from Pecos by road, max. 25 miles, 30 tops.
Why?
To be close to Walker. He might have planned on smuggling Carmen out if necessary, or maybe bringing Ellie in to see her, whatever it took to convince her that the threat was real. So I think they'll have holed up somewhere nearby.
And near a tourist attraction?
Definitely. That's key.
Can this work? She asked. Finding the right place in your head?
It's worked for me before.
How many times? As a percentage?
He ignored the question, went back to the map. She gripped the wheel and drove, dropped her eyes to the speedometer.
Oh, God!
She whispered. He didn't look up. What?
We're out of gas. It's right on empty. The warning light is on.
He was quiet for a second. Keep going. We'll be okay. She kept her foot hard down.
How? You think the gauge is broken?
He looked up, glanced ahead. Just keep going.
We're going to run out.
Don't worry. She drove on. The car rocked hard. The headlights bounced ahead of them. The tires whined on the streaming blacktop. She glanced down again.
It's right on empty, Reacher. Below empty.
Don't worry.
Why not?
You'll see. He kept his eyes on the windshield. She drove on as fast as the Jeep would go. The engine was growling, loud, a gruff old straight six drinking gasoline at the rate of a pint every minute. Use two-wheel drive, he said. More economical. She wrestled with the drivetrain lever and wrenched it forward. The front end of the car went quiet. The steering stopped fighting her. She drove on. Another half mile, then a mile. She glanced down at the dash again.
We're running on fumes.
Don't worry, he said for the third time. another mile. The engine stumbled and coughed once and ran ragged for a second and then picked up again. Air in the fuel line, he thought, or sludge dredged up from the bottom of a tank.
Reacher, we're out of gas,
Alice said. Don't worry about it.
Why not?
Another mile. That's why not, he said suddenly. The right edge of the headlight beam washed over the ragged gravel shoulder and lit up a steel-blue Ford Crown Victoria. It had four VHF antennas on the back and no wheel covers. It was just sitting there, inert and abandoned, facing north. We'll use that. It'll have most of a tank. They were well organized. She braked hard and pulled in behind it.
This is theirs? Why is it here?
Walker left it here.
How did you know?
It's pretty obvious. They came down from Pecos in two cars, this and the Lincoln. They dumped the Lincoln here and used the Ford the rest of the way. Then Walker ran away from the Mesa, put the pickup back in the barn, drove the Ford back up here, retrieved his Lincoln, and came back down in it for our benefit, to make us think it was his first visit, if we happened to be still alive and looking.
What about the keys?
They'll be in it. Walker wasn't in the right frame of mind to worry about Hertz losing a rental car. Alice jumped out and checked, gave a thumbs up. The keys were in it. Reacher followed her with the maps. They left the Greer's Jeep with the doors standing open and the motor idling through the last of its gas. They got into the Crown Vic, and he racked his seat back, and she pulled hers forward. She fired it up, and they were on the road again within 30 seconds, already doing 60 miles an hour.
It's three quarters full, and it drives much better.
He nodded. It felt low and fast and smooth, exactly like a big sedan should. I'm sitting where Al Eugene sat, he said. She glanced at him. He smiled. Go faster, he said. Nobody will stop you. We look just like a squad car. She accelerated to 75, then 80. He found the dome light and clicked it on and returned to the maps.
Okay, where were we? He said. The McDonald Observatory? You didn't like it.
He nodded. It was too far out. He tilted the map to catch the light, stared hard at it.
Concentrate, Reacher. Make it work, if you can.
What's at Balmoria State Recreation Area? He asked. It was still southwest of Pecos, but only 30 miles out. The right sort of distance.
It's a desert oasis, like a huge lake. Very clear. You can swim and scuba dive there.
But not the right sort of place. I don't think so, he said. He checked northeast, up to 30 miles out. What about Monahan's sandhills?
4,000 acres of sand dunes, looks like the Sahara.
That's it? And people go there?
It's very impressive.
He went quiet and checked the map all over again. What about Fort Stockton?
It's just a town. No different than Pecos, really.
Then she glanced across at him.
But old Fort Stockton is worth seeing, I guess.
He looked at the map. Old Fort Stockton was marked as a historic ruin, north of the town itself, nearer Pecos. He measured the distance, maybe 45 miles.
Possible.
What is it, exactly? He asked.
Heritage site. An old military fort. The Buffalo soldiers were there. Confederates had torn the place down. The Buffaloes rebuilt it. 1867, I think.
He checked again. The ruins were southeast of Pecos, accessible from Route 285, which looked like a decent road. Probably a fast road. Probably a typical road. He closed his eyes. Alice raced on. The Crown Vic was very quiet. It was warm and comfortable. He wanted to go to sleep. He was very tired. Wet spray from the tires hissed against the underside.